It's estimated that somewhere around the year 336, Christmas became an official holiday. Then in 1621, it was the very first Thanksgiving. So one could argue that between those two events, the official holiday season was essentially born. It's interesting to consider how that celebration has evolved over the years. Certainly, it can't resemble now much of what it looked like back then. But how do we keep alive that holiday spirit? Today, we talk Christmas and all things holiday on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
What is your favorite Christmas tradition? For a lot, it's a trip to the relative's home or maybe a specific meal in an all-important place. For others, it's shopping, and a lot of it. In fact, the National Retail Federation estimates that Americans are going to spend over $700 billion this year on all things Christmas. But your type of Christmas could be a lot simpler and involve less green or more green, depending upon what type of Christmas tree you have. Today on Town Hall, Ohio, we're going to go behind the scenes and take a look at how Ohioans spend their holidays together. With this week's Christmas story on Town Hall, Ohio, we're going to turn things over to my good friend, Vince Tornero.
It's a picturesque scene. The snow is gently falling on the hillside outside the family home. They've just finished Christmas dinner. Dad is thinking about another slice of pie, and the fireplace is crackling. The smell of pine from the beautifully decorated tree permeates the air, along with the warmth of love this family shares for each other. When suddenly, a gift is unwrapped and the child's eyes widen with excitement, taking in what is now in his hands. This is the gift he's always wanted for Christmas. And now he has it. The holiday season, Christmas, while it can be hard for many, is a time for travel, great memory-inducing foods and smells, presents, songs, church services, and that big tree, whether it's pine or plastic. But one thing that we haven't mentioned is how this scene was even put together, how it was built, how the roads had to be cleared and treated so this family could get to their home. Not to mention dinner, the presents, and the tree. Someone's behind that. And I don't mean mom and dad. So who is behind it all? I'm Vince Tornero. Join me on this edition of Town Hall, Ohio, as we discover who is harvesting Christmas. Let's start with traveling to Christmas. And of course, one key component of memory-making endeavors is indeed just that, traveling, getting in the car. Most often we think of the car, heading to grandma's, and all that. But how many of us will actually be on the roads this holiday season? And who is behind clearing the roads and taking care of them?
So Matt Bruning, press secretary at the Ohio Department of Transportation. At ODOT, we do a lot of important things here. Obviously, we take care of all of the interstates and then also state and U.S. routes outside of municipalities. One of the things that attracted me to this job here at ODOT is the fact that we impact people's lives, probably more so, I would almost argue, than any other state agency. Because, you know, goods and services get to the store, they have to use roads and bridges. So when you look at the whole system, everything. There are more than almost 123,000 miles of public roadway in the state of Ohio. Of that, ODOT actually maintains about 19,474. So the vast majority of roads are actually on the local system.
That is incredible. 123,000 miles of public roads in Ohio. That's enough to go to Hawaii and back 13 times from Columbus. Sounds good right about now. Not impressed about that? Well, take into account that a flight from Thailand is just shy of 9,000 miles. And as you heard Matt say, ODOT is responsible for major roadways, which account for roughly 15% of Ohio's roads. 15% may not seem like an incredibly huge number, but it is a massively huge, tall task, especially in these colder months of the year.
Last year was a very tough winter. We used about 954,000 tons of salt. Our employees spent 1.1 million hours dealing with snow and ice, and they drove those plow trucks about 10.5 million miles.
10.5 million miles driven to clear Ohio's roads? Well, put down the fruitcake and get this. That's enough to travel, wait for it, 420 times around the world. And the amount of time they spent doing that? 127 years.
The bulk of our salt actually comes from a couple of mines here in Ohio that are under Lake Erie. But we also obtain salt from different vendors, and they get their salt from a variety of areas. So what we want to do is go to the market and get some competitive bids, and that helps to keep the price down as much as we can. This year, unfortunately, the price has gone up because of the high demand from last year, but those prices, just like gas prices, they fluctuate based on demand and supply. We know for every minute that a roadway is impacted by a crash, the risk of a secondary crash goes up about 3%. And the secondary crashes can sometimes be worse than the original. You know, you've got a minor fender bender that blocks up a lane a mile back where you've got traffic backed up. Someone's not paying attention, and they slam into the back of the queue, and that's where you have a fatality or a serious injury.
So Matt, the ODOT spokesman, also added that it's critically important to pay attention and move over when you see ODOT or any type of law enforcement activity while on Ohio's roads.
So the best resource for construction project information is actually OHGO.com. It's OHGO.com. There's an app for it as well. And not only will it give you construction information, but it will also give you traffic information. You can look at more than 600 traffic cameras. You can see when there's a crash. You can see what current highway speeds are. All of that information is packed into that app.
But wait a second, how do they get all that information? I mean, they got to get that from somewhere.
Check, 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 test 1, 2.
Well, to answer that, Matt took me a few floors up in ODOT's West Columbus headquarters to a room that's filled with at least 15 workstations. It's got like 3 to 4 monitors apiece at each station.
So where are we walking in right now? What's this coming up?
So this is the Traffic Management Center here in Columbus, and this is where we monitor more than 600 traffic cameras. We're talking to those State Farm Freeway Safety Patrol vehicles that you see dispatched in the major metro areas. We're talking with our partners in law enforcement and first responders to, you know, find out where there are crashes, how can we help, what kind of information do we have to put up on those digital message boards that you see all over the state. So all of that happens out of the Traffic Management Center here in Columbus.
And this traffic center is staffed 24/7, 365.
There are people here 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So there's always somebody in here monitoring traffic.
So if you look at this map over here, you can see that, you know, there's yellow lines, then there are red lines is when it's really backed up. How do you know that specific stretch is yellow or red or really slow?
So a lot of our speed data actually comes from cell phones. We buy the data from cell phone carriers, and so they use anonymous cell phone data to tell how fast your device is going down the roadway. And that's all brought into a computer, and every 60 seconds we get an update that shows us what the average speed is.
So work with me here. Let's follow this trail. If your cell phone can report how fast you're driving, that means the law enforcement, police, never mind. Okay, this is the holiday season. It's not 1984.
I think the future is going to involve a lot more technology. What you're going to see is, trying to, take the human judgment, which is responsible for 94% of all crashes, out of the equation more and more and use smart technology. So where cars are talking to each other, cars are talking to the infrastructure, and I'll give you a real-world example of that. Let's say your vehicle has this technology deployed in it, you're driving on the highway, and you hit a slick spot, and your anti-skid technology kicks into gear. Your vehicle will then alert us exactly where you were on the highway, and we can dispatch a salt truck out there to treat that. Not only that, but your car can also send a message to the vehicles behind you to let them know there's black ice on the highway, and they should probably be more alert when they get to that spot.
That's Matt Bruning, spokesman for the Ohio Department of Transportation, and he referenced a handy app. It's called OGO, O-H-G-O. Just search that into Google or your Google Play Store or the App Store, and you can catch it for more information about traffic on Ohio's roads. That's how the roads are maintained, but how many of us are actually traveling this holiday season?
My name is Kimberly Schwind. I'm the Senior Manager of Public Affairs here at AAA Ohio Auto Club, and we're talking about year-end holiday travel today. We're looking at one-third of Americans traveling during this holiday period, and about 40% of Ohioans that are going to be traveling. We're looking at 112.5 million American travelers, including 4.6 million Ohio travelers traveling at least 50 miles from home through now and then through January 1st. And this is a 4.4% increase over last year. And again, the most holiday travelers on record since AAA started keeping records in the year 2000. The economy, a lot of people don't realize, plays a huge role in the travel numbers every year. And you can see that very clearly when we look at the economic trends and the travel trends as they correlate over the last several years. You know, unemployment is down, and so more people are working, so that definitely helps. And then we also look at, you know, how are people, what is their view of the economy? Because when they're more confident, they're going to spend more money.
Kimberly Schwinn at AAA says that a common belief can be that Thanksgiving is the most traveled period, but that's actually not correct.
Actually, believe it or not, the year-end holiday period has the highest numbers of the year. So we're looking at, you know, good chunk. Again, 40% of Ohioans are going to be traveling.
While it may not be the emotional warmth of your relative's home, a popular winter holiday spot is Orlando, Florida. Of course, Disney, Cancun, Honolulu, Jamaica, and more. But if you're traveling by car, be sure to take another good look over your tires. How full are they? Fluids in your car and even other fluids. Pack some water for you and even the pet if you may be traveling with a dog or cat.
You know, last time when we were traveling for Thanksgiving, we forgot water for the dog. So she was thirsty, but she drank my husband's water.
Again, that's Kimberly Schwinn with AAA and a record year-end travel season here in the state and beyond. So that's the world behind Ohio's roads and how many are traveling on them. But how do you actually pass the time when you're in the car? You might play Words with Friends, Candy Crush, or mindlessly scroll through Facebook, but turn on the radio and you may hear this song. How many of the 12 Days of Christmas birds do reside in Ohio?
So my name is Marnie Pitchnell. I'm the Wildlife Program Specialist for the Ohio State University Extension. So, you know, when we hear the song, we might think calling birds, C-A-L-L-I-N-G. And if you actually go to the roots of the songs, there, or the root of the song, it's referring to collie birds, so C-O-L-L-Y. And that collie actually means sooty or black. So while we do have blackbirds here in Ohio, several different species, it's believed that the song was referring to the Eurasian blackbird, which is not a species that we have here. It's actually, it breeds in Europe, Asia, and North Africa. You know, the one that we're most familiar with would be the giant Canada goose, which is a subspecies of the Canada goose. So our native swans, we have the trumpeter swans, which is actually an Ohio threatened species. And then we also have the tundra swan, which migrates through Ohio, so it doesn't actually nest here. But we see it flying over, maybe stopping here and there during spring and fall migration.
In short, the collie birds, geese a-laying, and swans a-swimming definitely are in or pass through Ohio. And to see the entire list, visit cfaes.osu.edu and search for Do the 12 Days of Christmas Birds Live in Ohio? Up next on Town Hall Ohio's Harvesting Christmas, we're going to travel to a turkey farm near Dayton and see how other birds end up on your table. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. My name is Vince Tornero. While Joe Cornelia is off today, we're harvesting Christmas and traveling through how an Ohio holiday comes together. In the next segment, we'll consider how you can keep off the pounds as we get closer into the new year. And later on, we'll dive into the world of a 35-year-old Christmas tree farm. But for now, let's head to Dayton and discover a 70-year-old farm operation that's built on faith, family, and food. It's the Bowman Landis Turkey Farm, and as you'll soon learn, they aren't really a farm, per se. It's more like an enterprise, because they do it all, and they have been for quite a long time. While looking into the Bowman Landis Farm, I came across some historic footage that they've put together, and that's where we'll begin.
The Bowman Landis Turkey Farm in New Carlisle, Ohio, is one of Miami Valley's most treasured farming landmarks. The Bowman Landis Turkey Farm traces its roots back to 1943, when Orville Bowman hired Dennis Landis for $15 per week and free room and board to work on the farm.
My name is Drew Bowman. I'm with Bowman and Landis Turkey Farms. We're a third-generation family turkey farm. We generally place about 70,000 turkeys for the Thanksgiving and Christmas season. So, and I can give you a little bit of background on our turkey-raising process. We actually receive the turkeys from a hatchery at the first day of age. So the turkeys hatch in the morning, and we receive them that evening. So, and then from there, our turkeys are raised. For the first couple weeks, they have to be in a temperature-controlled environment. So we've got some heated barns, and the barns are actually about 95 degrees. So we have to keep them nice and warm for the chicks. And we call them poults, actually. And then from there, we can start raising turkeys free range at about 6 to 7 weeks of age. We can start letting them outside on pasture.
Later on the show, in the last segment, we're going to talk about Christmas trees and how much it takes, like 7 to 10 years, for a crop of Christmas trees to actually be ready for harvest. But what's in it for turkeys? Like, how long does it take for them to get to harvest?
The typical a market age for a turkey is anywhere from 14 to 20 weeks. So we raise both toms, the male turkeys, and hens, the female turkeys. So our turkeys are harvested in our USDA-inspected harvesting facility on our farm. So we actually can walk the birds back into our harvesting facility to put minimal stress on the turkey. They don't have to be trucked to a third party or anything of that nature. And then we, humanely as possible, harvest them according to USDA standards. And then we basically do the whole harvesting on our farm, and they are immediately chilled after they're harvested. And then from chilling, then we would package them the following day, and then they're immediately taken to cold storage.
One of the most interesting aspects of the Bowman Landis turkey operation is that they are truly an all-encompassing farm.
Outside of the hatchery, we essentially control the entire life and product cycle of the turkey. So, you know, as I mentioned before, we get our turkeys at one day of age, raise them their whole lives on our farm, harvest them on our farm, and then we also do further processing in our farm. So in addition to, you know, fresh whole turkeys and breasts, we also make anything from turkey burgers, sausages, deli meats, smoked turkey parts. And then on our farm, we also have a retail store that's open year-round. To be honest, given the amount of turkeys, it's kind of hard to be attached to just one. We realize, you know, it is a business, and you know, we try to treat them as humanely as possible while they're here, we appreciate having them all. We also are a row crop farmer, so we also harvest corn and soybeans, and we actually mix and grind our own feed on site that we can feed to the turkeys.
Well, it is admirable that the Bowman Landis Turkey Farm is, in essence, a self-sustaining organization. The most important part is easily that it's deeply rooted in family.
Prior to joining the family business as an adult, I worked in the corporate world, and I've really appreciated the opportunity to come back to the turkey farm and work with family members, and working in a small family business that's more entrepreneurial. And so I just really respect that I can work amongst family and carry on the tradition of our family business. I mentioned my grandfather and Mr. Landis started the farm in 1948, so it is very important to me that we can continue to honor them and carry on the tradition of the family business. Bowman and Landis, even today, is a two-family-run farm. So the Bowmans, which I'm a third-generation member of, and I also have a father and an aunt and a cousin from the Bowman side who are actively involved in the day-to-day operations. And on the Landis side, they also have two second-generation members and a third-generation and a couple of fourth-generation members that are coming up in the family business. So we're definitely excited and honored to keep the family business going, and we think we've got some good younger people to keep the the business going for the long-term future. So we're excited about that as well.
Next on Town Hall Ohio's Harvesting Christmas.
This year we're forecasting up to $720 billion will be spent over the months of November and December on all things holiday. And that is higher than last year's forecast, which came at about $650 billion.
No, absolutely not.
Keeping the pounds off now and into the new year. That's next, and we're back in a moment.
I think it's important to indulge our food and drink pleasures, and I don't think that there's any food that's necessarily off limits.
You're listening to Town Hall Ohio. On today's program, we're harvesting Christmas, exploring the world behind the creation of many Ohio holidays. I'm Vince Tornero. In the next segment, we'll look at the staggering amount of money you and I will spend on gifts, and what stores are typically difficult, naughty or nice, when it comes to returns. So far, we've covered travel, food. Now, let's think about what happens after the meal, perhaps when the snacks come out. In 2017, the most popular snacks were, going from the bottom to the top here, nuts, ice cream, crackers, cookies, cheese, candy, and last but not least, salty snacks. Interestingly enough, a study in the UK reveals that snacking is largely on the rise with men around the age of 45. But according to an article I found on Forbes, millennials are the most likely to snack up to 4 times a day. 94% of Americans admit to finding a midday bite as well. With some wise advice on how to avoid those extra calories, it's Ohio State nutrition expert Carolyn Gunther.
I'm an associate professor at Ohio State. I am in the human nutrition department, and I've been doing nutrition-related research probably around 20 years now.
So with all the food in front of you, all these options that are available, is there any one thing that you should stay entirely away from?
No, absolutely not. I think it's important to indulge our food and drink pleasures, and I don't think that there's any food that's necessarily off limits. I wouldn't qualify any food or beverage at that Christmas meal as being bad or good necessarily, and would encourage people to eat what they want to in moderation. You don't want to show up to a party really hungry. You know, on these party days, which are often like earlier in the day, earlier, like, you know, mid-afternoon, oftentimes, you know, make sure that you have a decent breakfast and a light lunch, or you could have a later brunch that's satisfying. So that's one of the golden rules, is to not necessarily walk into the party being ravishingly hungry.
So eating before the party or a gathering is a really great idea, but what if you actually forget to do that? What food should you go for?
A couple of recommendations come to mind. First of all, find the raw veggies. Eat those raw veggies, you know, carrot sticks and, you know, cucumbers and celery sticks, that they will make you feel full, at least temporarily.
So let's pause for a quick second and look at some of the most extreme junk foods ever, according to Mental Floss. Number 5 is Denny's Fried Cheese Melt. Cheese sticks inside of a grilled cheese. You got the Guy Fieri Cheesecake Challenge. It's basically half a cheesecake with a bunch of toppings. Then it's Friendly's Grilled Cheese Burger Melt. Number 2 is Pizza Hut's Hot Dog Stuffed Pizza. And the most junkiest of junk foods ever, according to Mental Floss, the KFC Double Down. I would try this. It's a sandwich where deep fried chicken patties are the buns. Hey, so you only live once, right? But speaking of once, this nutrition expert advises taking one moment and sort of letting things settle.
You know, the other thing is just to try to stop and pause and get a gauge on your hunger or fullness. That can do wonders just to, I mean, even for, you know, less than a minute, you know, make yourself sort of just pause before you go after the chips and dip.
Come to think of it, this nutrition expert has really great ideas for life in general, doing things in moderation. So these really aren't necessarily just holiday eating tips. They could be life eating tips. While she doesn't entirely exclude enjoying an adult beverage or two during the season, Carolyn Gunther does advise extra caution with cocktails and says they're typically calorie laden.
The other thing for sure, too, is to minimize the alcohol, because not only is it extra calories, but it can also, I mean, you lose inhibitions, right, when you drink alcohol. So it can cause you to overeat. You know, the typical American gains 1 to 2 pounds over the holidays, and the data show that those pounds are not lost, that they're permanent. So I think the biggest mistake is not waking up the next day and saying, this is a new day, I'm going to get back into my regular eating habits, and exercise habits. Yeah, and I think, tracking your behaviors is one of the best ways of changing your behavior in a sustained kind of way. And MyFitnessPal is an app that is widely used and, you know, gets endorsements.
So in short, enjoy what you love in moderation. You can bounce back after an extended cheat day. Eat something healthy before you go to a party and track your progress using an app. But even this healthy eating professor does have her vice.
I like potato chips. I love salty snacks.
In moderation, of course. Coming up, considering the presents under the tree.
If you're shopping for yourself, after Christmas is the best time to shop. I mean, the deals are out of this world, especially when it comes to winter apparel. So if you can hold off buying yourself that brand new jacket or gloves or hat, the best deals are happening after Christmas.
That's next on Town Hall Ohio's Harvesting Christmas. I'm Vince Tornero, and we're harvesting Christmas on this edition of Town Hall Ohio. Joe Cornelli is off today as we're discovering the fascinating world behind different elements of your Ohio holiday season. And before we continue, if you'd like to hear more on this show, or if you'd like to listen to past Town Hall Ohio shows, you can visit ofbf.org and click on the Issues tab. You can also look for Town Hall Ohio on Apple Podcasts and other podcast providers. Now back to the show. According to Time Magazine, parents are projected to spend just over $1,700 in total on Christmas shopping. That amounts to $496 per child, and the numbers don't seem to be slowing down. In fact, Juniper Research says that, quote, smart toy sales will exceed $15 billion, that's with a B, in sales by the year 2022.
My name is Anna Serafin-Smith. I'm the Senior Director of Media Relations at the National Retail Federation. Yeah, so this year we're forecasting up to $720 billion will be spent over the months of November and December on all things holiday. And that is higher than last year's forecast, which came at about $650 billion.
She goes on to say that contributing factors are tax reform that was passed earlier this year, as well as an increase in pay and a pretty healthy job market. So what is the hot seller this Christmas?
Well, every year, one category that comes to no surprise why it's the favorite gift to receive and to give is gift cards. It's just easy, convenient, and especially for those last-minute shoppers, it's something that is really quick to grab and move on with your day instead of having to think too much about it. However, other areas that are top gifts to give for the holiday season include apparel, toys, and naturally electronics.
Naturally, it can be sometimes easy as a shopper to wonder, like, am I really getting the best deal? Are really the good deals this time of year or around Black Friday? Well, Serafin-Smith with the National Retail Federation says that, yeah, the best deals are usually around this time of year, but there is a small catch.
If you're shopping for yourself, after Christmas is the best time to shop. I mean, the deals are out of this world, especially when it comes to winter apparel. So if you can hold off buying yourself that brand new jacket or gloves or hat, the best deals are happening after Christmas. Any fitness items will also be deeply into after Christmas. If you remember, folks love a good new weight loss challenge after the holidays. And so people are going out there trying to get, whether it's fitness apparel to a new Fitbit, Apple Watch, so on and so forth.
One increasing and common strategy with these quote-unquote big box retailers is to offer order online, pickup in store options. But the National Retail Federation reports that even that option, that idea, can result in higher receipts when you leave the store.
But when consumers go online, buy online and pick up in store, they about 72% of the consumers end up doubling the basket size at the store. So if you bought, let's say, a pair of jeans that you were picking up in store, more than likely you're going to walk out with one or two other items before you actually leave the store above what you had already purchased. But the future of retail, you know, we are optimistic of what comes next year. However, the fear of tariffs, can't forget tariffs or taxes, is on the horizon. And because of that, we can't really at this moment say how strong the year is going to look like for retailers next year until we see what the final results are between the U.S. and the China trade wars.
While the holidays are traditionally known as a time of warmth and happy memories, there are those moments of stress, like when you're unwrapping a gift in front of that relative and you're almost like praying that it's something that you need or want. But what if it isn't? Donna Rosato of Consumer Reports has a really great list and some ideas on how you can return those misfits.
L.L. Bean is an interesting one. Before February 2018, you could buy something at L.L. Bean and there was no time limit on when you have to return it or proof of purchase. Last year, they said, you know what, we're going to change that. You know, while it used to let people, you know, exchange or return them years after purchasing, now customers only have 1 year. Yeah, I think that Bath & Beyond, you know, you can return things in-store or by mail, and there's no time limit for them.
So to recap, the friendliest retailers for returns, according to Donna Rosato, are L.L. Bean, Bed Bath & Beyond, Nordstrom, Costco, Kohl's, and JCPenney. So who's kind of on the naughty list? Well, one big name stands out.
Apple's a tough customer. You know, they have a really tight return policy as well. And then you've got, you know, Kmart and Sears, which are big but struggling. Apple's not struggling. And then you have some smaller players in the naughty list, like GameStop.
So there you have it. The more difficult return policies include Apple, Forever 21, Barnes & Noble, and Best Buy. And if you have to return a gift,
keep the gift receipt. You hope that the gift giver gives you a gift receipt. So if you're the purchaser, get the gift receipt. If you're the person who's receiving the gift, hold on to the gift receipt.
He's been in this line of work for 35 years, and he's got 24,000 of them. That's coming up on Town Hall, Ohio, as we're harvesting Christmas. Beyond the birth of Jesus, Santa, and maybe a few others, one of the biggest Christmas icons is the tree. According to the National Christmas Tree Association, the numbers are staggering. At least 25 million trees are sold in the U.S. every year. There are nearly 350 million Christmas trees right now growing here in the U.S. There are well over 250,000 acres alone for the sole purpose of growing evergreens. There are roughly 15,000 Christmas tree farms in the U.S., and there are over 100,000 people employed by this industry. The top Christmas tree producing states? Oregon, North Carolina, that's state up north, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Washington. While Ohio isn't on the list, there are 24 acres near Mount Corey, Ohio, that just don't house some Fraser firs. They house memories that are deeply rooted in family.
My name's Dave Reese. My wife and I are the owners of Kaleidoscope Farms. We started planting our first trees 35 years ago and selling the first ones 28 years ago. The main reason we started the farm was we have four sons. My wife and I were both teachers, but we both were raised on a farm and wanted them to learn the values of hard work and pride in your work and maintaining quality and so forth that you can learn in an agricultural enterprise.
Raising a crop of trees to harvest can be complicated, considering that it takes 7 to 10 years for a Fraser fir to be ready for your home. And if there are issues in one harvest, it can take up to a year for that previous year's problems to be erased. This Mount Corey, Ohio Christmas tree farm is in a town, according to the census, in 2010, had a population of 204. Kaleidoscope Farms evergreens far outnumber the people.
We have at any time up to 24 acres of trees, 1,000 per acre, so you know, up to 24,000 right now.
Of course, in the debate of real or fake trees, Dave Reese obviously argues that there is no contest whatsoever, highlighting the positive environmental impact that real trees can have.
Tree bank protection, Division of Wildlife uses them for wildlife areas and brush piles, and they sink them into ponds and lakes for fish cover. And they're mulched. People can just use them in their backyard throughout the rest of the winter for dirt to attract birds and give a little cover for them if they want them to come to their feeders. And there's just very many ways to recycle and reuse a tree. So over the years we've had reindeer here. They were frisky, feeling pretty frisky and running back and forth, and they'd run in the barn and come back out and so forth. So I turned the corner and headed down the little pathway here. They came running out full speed and did a turn. And we met head on right in the middle of the narrow path, and Grandpa did get run over by a reindeer.
But as for me and Grandpa, we believe
Merry Christmas.
Something that should be pointed out, however, is Dave's commitment to commitment. He's 71 and has been a tree farmer for 35 years. He has almost been doing this for more than half his life. But most importantly, he's been married to his wife Jan for 48 years. For Dave Reese in 1983, his Kaleidoscope Farm operation was a new opportunity to raise and feed his family. Now in 2018, challenges with his health preclude him from partaking in many of the usual farm activities. But his reward doesn't come from the work that he can do. Dave harvests a sense of joy and deep satisfaction that his and thousands of other families come together to sow memories at Kaleidoscope Farms.
And now my grandchildren have 8 grandkids, and they're starting to learn the same values and principles that we thought were important for our son. So, yeah, it's been a great thing. It's actually a dream come true.
You've been listening to Harvesting Christmas, presented by the Ohio Farm Bureau and produced by Wessler Media. If you'd like to hear this again and perhaps other Town Hall Ohio programming, you can go to ofbf.org, click on the Issues tab, or look for us in Apple Podcasts. Special thank you to everyone who took part in this, and especially to Joe Corneli. He'll be back next week. My name is Vince Tornero, and from everyone here at the OFBF, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzle was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.